Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today, I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, thanks, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. And just like every week, Nick, I'm excited because this week is Challenge Weekly Show number 68.
Yes.
68. And I don't really have anything for 68 other than maybe it's a prime number. No, it's not a prime number. Prime numbers is non-divisible by a number, right?
Yeah, I think so. But
Yeah.
What about just 68 feeling great?
68 feeling great. I think what I wanted to do with 68 was that, you know, it's a nice round number. You got 6, you got 8, you can divide it by lots of numbers. You know, it's just a nice number, 68, and feeling great. That's why.
And I'm sure it's good to be 68 years old as well.
Yeah, that's better, some would say, than 67, because you're another year older, another year wiser.
Yep.
We'll go with that. Welcome to Challenge Weekly show episode number 68. We've got lots to get through. And of course, if you like this episode, you can check out our 67 other episodes. Maybe not 67 because what we understood was that 6 was afraid of 7, because 7, 8, 9. So maybe you skip that one, but check it out too, because that's really good as well. But
I think it's our best work. So
I think
don't skip it.
Don't skip it, but skip it, but don't skip it. Okay.
Go backwards listening to us.
Yes.
I reckon.
Yes.
Because we're better and better every time. So, yeah.
You know, Nick, sometimes I put on my tinfoil hat, right? And because I like to live life as a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, because it just makes life exciting to an extent, right? And, you know, I have subliminally been putting in messages into the Challenge Weekly shows, and you will only find out those messages if you listen to it backwards.
When did you start doing it, though?
Oh, you will never know. So my challenge to you is if you go and listen to the Challenge Weekly Show backwards, you can tell me which episode you find out my hidden message, and you can message me that, and I will send you out a sweet prize.
You've got to be really careful with this, because some randoms are going to come out of and slide into your DMs with all sorts of things now.
No. You've got 67 hours of listening to us backwards, and you might be able to find my hidden message.
Yeah, it's always going to be just lift weights.
Always just lift weights. Lift weights backwards. I don't even know how to say that.
Reverse
grip backwards. Yes. Look, Nick, it's always an exciting time in the challenge, because next week we are finally launching our app onto the app stores with an S. So as of next Monday, the 13th of June, you'll be able to download the brand new M Challenge app onto your smartphone. So either on your iPhone or on iOS. So you can download that through the Apple Store, or on Android through Google Play. And you can download that app and get it onto your phone. Finally, after months and months of waiting, we finally get this brand new app. I'm excited, Nick.
Oh, I can't wait. It seems like it's just been so long, this journey. So very exciting to be at this point, which is not the finish line. It's actually the start.
Yes, it is a start. And it's kind of like the pre-start line. Let's be honest here. Pre-start line, because the next challenge actually technically begins on the 11th of July. Okay, so 11th of July. Yes, you could download the app as of the 13th of June, but we're still, we've got 4 weeks of time before you can actually start the challenge. Okay. And we have built the app in the same way that we have run the Max and Maxine challenge, where we have a prep week, which begins on the 4th of July. And, you know, very Americanized, right? Independence, 4th of July. That's when you can actually go into the app and actually start setting up your training and nutrition. Okay. So if you do download the app and you sign up to the challenge, as of Monday, the 13th of June, you can access, a whole host of features on the app. So you can ask us questions on the forum. You can go check out the goals area and the journals area, and you can join in on our step tallies. You can read all these articles that Coach Nick and I have created, but you'll have to wait until the 4th of July to set up your training and nutrition, and then upload your start photo. And then the challenge officially starts on the 11th of July. So we've still got a couple of weeks here. So it doesn't mean you have to start on Monday, but you can download that app and get started, which is awesome.
Yeah, make sure it works on your phone for you, and that you've got enough storage and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Because, I mean, I know one of my phones is so full that I can't even put another app on it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Just do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the first challenge that I'm seeing on the app, which I guarantee individuals will have the same challenge, is through the step counting feature. Okay, and I'll just talk you through for my tech heads out there. So our app, really cool. It pulls data from either Apple Health or Google Health on your phone. So if you have an Android or an iPhone, you'll have that app, the health app, and the M Challenge app just pulls data from that application. Now, if you have another app, let's say like the Fitbit app or the Garmin app to track your steps, sometimes there's a little bit of a delay between the communication between the Garmin app into the Apple Health app into the M Challenge app. Okay, so you might be looking at your watch and going, "Well, Steve, I've done like, you know, 14,000 steps today, but on my M Challenge app, it only says I've done 4,000 steps today." Okay, there might be a slight delay between that information going from, let's say, the Garmin app to the Apple Health app to the M Challenge app. So that's probably the first challenge that individuals will face. Sometimes it might be a few settings on your device, which we will guide you through how to set that up nice and cleanly. But then other times it'll just be simply a synchronization time. So it might just be, every hour or so, there might be a new sync. So it might not be real time. You might not be able to see your steps kind of going up in real time. It might be just synced over time. So probably the first feature that individuals have some challenges with.
I just went into another section of the app and came back, and mine have gone a little bit better. Now I'm just holding it up to show you who's the leader.
Yeah, Nick, you're the leader at the moment. Look at you go. Thanks. Well, we'll see on Monday when we have a few other challenges come and join you in that step count if you can still be the leader.
Yeah, I don't think I can, because I certainly don't want to be doing any more than what I'm doing. So there'll be heaps of people that would want to do more than that. So I'm just enjoying my time in the sun.
It's lonely at the top, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, I don't want to be here for long. I'm hoping that I'll be at the very bottom, because I'm hoping people will do more than me.
Yeah. Now, I'm really excited about one of the features on the app, which is the forum. And I know it sounds strange to be excited about a forum, but I feel like the forum through the Max and the Maxine Challenge was one of the primary ways that Nick and I, we were able to help challengers and advise them and kind of coach them. And many individuals were frequent in the forum, and others were maybe more sitting on the fence, where they would watch or read certain conversations and had lots of just open learning, where some individuals would ask questions about supplements, and others might ask questions about injuries, and others might ask questions about training principles, and then others might find a research paper and want to talk about that. So there was lots of like broad discussions on the forum, and there was lots of individuals both interacting and then kind of observing for open learning. And we have created a forum which is native to the M Challenge app. So on your phone, you can interact with the forum. And the really cool feature is we have introduced the idea of responding to individual comments. Okay, now this it makes more sense if you use things like Instagram, where you write a comment and you could respond to a comment, or if you use something like Reddit, where you can have comment threads. And the same thing is on this M Challenge forum. So if you go into, let's say, a kind of like a mega thread of supplements, and you want to ask a question about supplements, you can ask a question and then we'll be able to answer your comments. So then all the questions about supplements could be in one thread with individual comments to comments, right? So it's kind of like a message tree, which I'm really excited to use. It'll be a nice way to kind of organize our forum and be the best way that Nick and I can give you the best advice possible, so you can get in the best shape of your life. I'm really excited.
I just wrote a question on there, but you're busy talking to me, so nobody can answer. I just ask, am I gaining muscle?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, Nick?
Now you have to write back to me and say, well, it depends.
It depends. No, I love it. But yes, no, I'm excited for next week, and we're going to kick off the M Challenge with a bang, I reckon. It's going to be good. Now, Nick, let's move on to our next segment here. We have our non-scale victories for the week. And I think we will have to start looking at our community and highlighting some of our non-scale victory participants next week, when the challenge, kind of softly begins, right? But for now, let's talk about non-scale victories. They're those victories that aren't related to, the changes on the scales that we look at when we're trying to lose weight or gain weight. So, Nick, do you have an NSV this week you want to talk about?
Yes. Well, I always, my NSPs are always related to gym performers. Well, I've only done one other, so let's not exaggerate. But yeah, so I have been doing 200 kilo hip thrusts, which is fantastic because that's pretty heavy for me. And they felt good. Well, not good, but good. And so that's a nice little marker, I think. 200 of anything, you would know, you like your 200s. 200 of anything is pretty good.
Yeah, 200 kilo hip thrusts, crazy.
I know. So yeah, that's just all about brute force and power.
Yeah,
being the Italian Viking that I am. So look out, everybody.
Well, I would say that it's a real glute effort, Nick. You should be proud of that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dad Jokes. That's going straight to the podcast Hall of Fame.
Podcast Hall of Fame. Look, Nick, I've got a pretty exciting NSV this week. And if you're following me on social media, my NSV was that I announced that, you might be able to hear a little baby in the background, but in the future, I'm going to have a second child. Yes. Steve is going to be a dad again, number two. We're going for baby number two, and that's coming in November. So I'm going to have two under two in 2022, Nick. So I'm really excited.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we found it a couple of months ago. We had to keep it under the wraps because you know what baby life is like, where you know things can become risky at the beginning. But yeah, we finally announced it on social media, and I think if you see me this time next year, I might have aged a couple of decades, having two young ones running around. But you know, I think the whole point of parenting is that it's not really about like the destination, right? It's not about like, you know, becoming a parent. It's about the journey, right? And each phase is learning something new. And in a weird way, it's kind of like the challenge, right? It's kind of like our fitness journeys, where it isn't just kind of like a start and end, right? It's not like I'm having one child and it's like, all right, cool, done that, and then I'm gonna have another child, a second child, done that thing. You know, it's about the journey through parenting, right? As I grow over time, and that's very, very much the same as you know, our fitness journeys. So I'm learning a lot about myself and life, and you know, having lots of those inflections, and you know, it kind of makes me a better coach, I believe. So yeah, that's my NSV is yeah, growing my family, having baby number two, and I'm excited that it is another boy. So I'm gonna have two boys. They're gonna be 14 months apart, and they are gonna keep me young, Nick. It's gonna be good.
How exciting! Congratulations on behalf of all of us. We're so excited for two babies.
Two babies,
two,
yes.
Little ones.
Two little ones.
I do think anything that you can experience in the way of things that keep it real, it always make you a better coach, because then somebody will say, I didn't get any sleep, or I'm starving because I haven't slept properly and my appetite's dysregulated, and you'll be like, well, I can really feel that. I really understand.
Yeah.
Reaches for a coffee.
I'm just living off caffeine at the moment. No, I think you know, you change from being like just like sympathetic to empathetic, right? Where you're kind of like, oh, previously when I'd speak to parents, you go, oh, you poor thing, I don't have kids, but I can imagine it's really hard. Whereas now I go, wait, I understand now how it's difficult to, you know, get in the gym or do your meal prep, or even just have time to do, you know, housework and stuff. So I get that. I understand that. And I think all those experiences come together and make you a better coach. And I think that's my NSV, is just, you know, understanding that, you know, every life lesson is part of the journey. And I think that's the same, yeah, in fitness, where every challenge you complete, every session that you do, every rep that you do, every meal that you make is another step in your journey, right? You know, every step you...
Yeah, I was just going to say, Sting, if Sting wants to come onto the podcast, every meal you make, every rep you...
Dude.
Fake. You can't fake reps. No, anyway.
No. Yeah, but like there's no end point, and I think... Yeah, you learn from every step of the way. Yeah.
Oh wow! So now we get to sing as well as part of our job. So like, there's nothing we don't get to do, really.
No.
We get to make apps and sing and do photos and eat burn bars.
We are basically like a Swiss Army knife of life.
It's really cool.
Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Okay. So this one's what to do when you've fallen off the wagon, quote unquote. So I don't really know if there is a wagon, because I think that wherever you are, you're still on the wagon. Like, there's no falling off it. It's just perhaps deviating from a path that you would maybe prefer to take or prefer to be on. The problem is, you've really got to ask yourself if that's actually where you prefer to be. Because if it's like some sort of a wagon where you think you should be on it, or you're not on it for the right reasons, you're probably pretty much not going to stay on track. But anyway, so this question came up, and it was just wondering what people are doing diet wise while awaiting the challenge. I was thinking of following my spreadsheet from the last challenges. I've put on a few kilos. So with all of that, I mean, we can go into the sort of nitty gritty about you should be at a certain caloric value, maintenance calories, or however you want to see it, you know, recovery diet, we've got that. But I was just going to say about the fact that I'd love people to start to think about the challenge diet as just groups of foods that you put together, like building blocks, like Legos. I mean, you'll be all over the Legos, Coach Steve. You'll have so many Legos soon with two little boys, Legos everywhere. Girls and boys like Lego, by the way, but it's building blocks. So I want you to think, what building blocks am I currently having? So what has made me fall off the wagon? So perhaps you're having, you know, as your, say you're having your proteins, fats and carbs, say you're having as your carbs and fats, perhaps you're having hot chips every day. And then as your protein, you might not be having as much as you should, or you may not be having the leanest protein, you know, things like that. So you think about it like this: you haven't stuffed up, you're still eating food. You're just possibly not eating the optimal combinations of food. And I guess that's what the challenge template is. It's more about ways to combine the food. So I want you to think of now how you can actually combine your foods to make them more optimal for your goals. So if you've been in a permanent diet phase, calorie deficit all the time, and you know it's not a good time to start dieting again, it is a good time to sort of be at those maintenance calories that we've spoken about. But if it's always a stop start diet where we only eat the foods when we're dieting, then we're setting ourselves up for trouble. We're also setting ourselves up ultimately to rebound, to gain a couple of kilos, maybe to lose one or two, maybe then to gain, and maybe not actually ever achieve our goal. So if we just spend a little bit of time, and it might be annoying, it might be frustrating, but getting to know these foods, repeating the same meals now, stop thinking about things as treats and not treats, find ways to healthily incorporate them into your life now, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be doing the groundwork. So then when you get to the challenge, you hit the ground running, and it actually doesn't feel like that much of a drama. So that's my advice. So some practical stuff is, spend some time working out what kind of foods you quote unquote like to eat, or you for some reason associate with pleasure. And that might be like your pizza. So then work out a way to make a nice homemade pizza. They taste beautiful. You know, if you can even allow for some, you know, if you count it in, you can have a little bit of olive oil on your pizza. No one's going to die. You just need to account it. You know, it's good if you become like a Sesame Street count for a little while until you graduate from counting and you kind of intuitively know what's going on. So a homemade pizza, clean out your fridge and pantry as well. I must say, we just did that recently. And it feels really nice to have a clean fridge. Like, my fridge is so clean that I will show you guys what's in it at some point. That's crazy. I never thought I'd do that. But that can represent a fresh start for you as well. And you can notice a trend about what you've been eating, because sometimes if it's all in the fridge shoved in there, you won't really know what's going on. You can kind of trick yourself. If you want to really start to get serious again, then I'd be keeping that food diary. So I'd be tracking what's going on with your meals, track your intake. You don't have to show anyone, but then you'll see why you might be gaining weight, because you have to be in a surplus to gain a couple of kilos. You've got to be eating more than what you are expending your energy. So you must have really backed off. So the other thing is, start your walking again. See if you can prep your meals. That's sort of starting to get more advanced. And the other thing is, it could be that sneaky alcohol. So if you really want to get serious again, I would just say, look at your food combinations, look at your building blocks, and start there.
Yeah, I like that. And I think many individuals will use that term, like, oh, I've fallen off the wagon. What does that mean? You know, there is no wagon. And I think what it really comes down to is maybe expectations, right? Where your expectations of doing this fitness thing is that you are going to, you know, wake up at 4 a.m., you're going to go to the gym for 1 hour to the minute, you're going to, you know, do the meal prep, whatever that looks like for you, and you're going to get this many steps in, and you're going to act like a certain person throughout this fitness journey. And if you don't act like that, if you don't meet your expectations, you've somewhat fallen off the wagon. And I would say that, you know, the wagon can be whatever it is for you, and that doesn't need to be a certain wagon on a pedestal, or, like, you know, some wagon that is moving the queen or something like that. It can just be just a wheelbarrow, right? It doesn't need to be anything super fancy. And I think it does come down to this kind of idea of, like, what is the bare minimum to achieve progress, and what's the bare minimum that you could introduce into your current environment and lifestyle. And that could be, you know, getting something like a Fitbit or a smartwatch and keeping track of your steps. And if you know that you do 3,000 steps, maybe aim for 4,000. It doesn't mean that you need to do something pretty like 10,000 steps every single day. As long as you're striving to improve yourself, great. You've got a wheelbarrow. You're making progress. When it comes down to your food intake, like you said, Nick, you know, find out what your trigger foods are, like pizza, for example. I love pizza.
I love pizza.
But, you know, I choose to make homemade pizza rather than eating out, because I know the difference between when I eat out and making homemade food. There's a really high difference in the total energy of those two foods, because food tastes really tasty, mainly through a combination of high carb, high fat foods. That's why things like, you know, pizzas and burgers and hot chips and stuff are, you know, so mouthwatering, and we overconsume and we have crazy amounts of calories. So those individuals that often say, oh, I couldn't possibly eat more than 1,200 calories, I'm like, you've probably eaten that in one single meal once in your life. You know what I mean? You couldn't eat that in a whole day. So, you know, if you are one to eat out all the time, you know, yeah, of course you're going to be consuming more calories. So maybe your starting point with your nutrition is to have more home-cooked meals. And that could be any home-cooked meal that you like making. But that might be better than, you know, choosing to have, I don't know, some sort of fast food, you know, every second night, because we know that they might not be super conducive to our goals. But yeah, the wagon is always interesting when it pops up, because it always is about expectations.
But yeah, I don't want people to, I love the challenge. I love us doing the challenge, but I would love it if you thought beyond that for the weeks between. So then there's no going backwards. There's just moving forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Because even just educating yourself is moving forward. Like, it doesn't have to always be a physical thing. It doesn't always have to be being perfect, and it doesn't have to be not slipping up or anything like that, but you need to recognize your triggers and things that you can improve upon, so then every time you go into the challenge, you go in better.
I agree. It's about building that foundation and building on it, right?
Yes.
Nick, I'd like to talk about Nutrition for Fat Loss Part 2. So it's my little mini-series, and last week we spoke about calories, and we spoke about this kind of concept of a fire, right? A bonfire, and the amount of calories kind of changes the size of the bonfire, that where we, if we were to add lots of fuel to a fire, the fire slowly gets bigger. And if we were to slowly take away fuel from the fire gets smaller. And that is an analogy for what calories are, which is a unit of measurement on how we measure energy. And if we consume more calories, we start to gain mass, so we get heavier, so our fire internally gets bigger. And if we were to take away consumption of calories, our fire gets smaller, so our body mass gets smaller. So that's understanding the concept of calories, how much energy we're consuming. And we're going to try to continue our conversation around nutrition for fat loss. And today I want to talk about understanding macronutrients, and then relating it back to this kind of concept of a bonfire, a fire. Okay. So here's the lowdown on macronutrients. So we've got four main macronutrients, three are often discussed. Okay. So firstly, we have proteins. Okay. Proteins primarily influence the regeneration and construction of cells. Okay. And they also interact with many functions and reactions in the body. So whenever chemical reactions happen in the body or nerves fire and stuff, proteins are always kind of present. Okay, so proteins play an important part in our life. Okay, and 1 gram of protein is around 4 calories. Okay, so if you were to consume 1 gram of protein, you'll digest that and your body has access to about 4 calories of energy. Okay. Next, we've got carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are the big player for just straight up energy for the body. So carbohydrates are broken down into glucose molecules, and our brain and cells love to use glucose as energy and will often try to convert other macronutrients into glucose so that it can be utilized as energy. Now, 1 gram of carbohydrates is similar to proteins. They are 4 calories per gram, okay? And next we have fats or dietary fats. Now, fats play an important part in hormone production and the absorption of vitamins and minerals. So we do need fats, they're really important. 1 gram of fat is about 9 calories. So more calorie dense is 1 gram of fat compared to 1 gram of protein or carbohydrate. Okay. And then finally, we have ethanol, not often discussed in macronutrients, and ethanol is found in alcohol. And 1 gram of ethanol is about 7 calories. They don't really play an important part in the body. If anything, it is kind of in that umbrella of a kind of like a toxin where the body, if it detects ethanol, it's going to prioritize that to get metabolized and sent out of the system. Now, amongst all of our macronutrients, regardless on how we organize our macros or try to get ratios of macros, if we're trying to have higher protein or lower carb or higher fat, whatever ratio we have, when it comes to fat loss, it needs to fit under a calorie constraint model. So each gram of our macronutrients, we combine that together to create our total calories intake, and then that drives fat loss. So you could only consume, let's say, proteins, and if you overate proteins where you consumed more calories than you required, you're going to gain more mass, okay? And that will be utilized for in your body to create things like your hair and your skin and your muscles and your bones. And it's also going to provide energy for your heart to pump and your brain to work. But then it's also parts of that is going to get stored as body fat, okay? That's the same as if you choose to only have carbohydrate or only eat fats, or heck, if you only drink alcohol, your body will find ways to utilize that to fuel your fire, okay? So let's bring it back to the fire. So if calories really drive the size of the fire, okay, the macronutrients drive kind of like the quality of the fire. And what I mean by quality is kind of like, you know, when you have a fire and let's say there's smoke that comes out of the fire, right? Where, if you put, let's say, wet wood on a fire, it's really smoky. Or if you put other random chemicals on it, it makes like kind of like a white fire. Or if you throw lots of paper on it, you know, the fire gets really bright, versus if you put like logs on it, the fire changes into maybe coals, right? So it kind of changes the quality of the fire. And that's kind of how macronutrients would work. Now, macronutrients are really close to more the performance elements in the body. So when we are trying to be performance athletes, we want to be skewing towards higher carb intakes and scaling our proteins and our fibers accordingly so that we can have access to energies. If we are maybe more of, trying to time our food around performance, it would be similar to how we would time putting things on the fire to turn the fire into, let's say, a cooking fire. Okay, so let's say you are out camping and you're going to make, let's say, a damper. Nick, I don't know if you ever made damper.
Yes.
Flour, water, maybe, I don't know, some M&Ms or something. You put it on a stick, M&M, put it on the fire, right? If you're making that, you need a fire that is less flamey and more, coaly, right? So you would time how you would put the bits of wood on that fire so that it can kind of break down and turn it into like coals so that you can cook. So that's how you would time and use macros from your day-to-day life if you are going to go train at, midday at 12 o'clock, you may choose to add fuel to your fire at like 11 o'clock. So that fire slowly turns into, let's say, embers that when you go to cook, you can, or train, you can cook. Okay. Now, the last kind of analogy I would pose to you is that it's going to sound really silly. Nick, you watched The Simpsons, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, in The Simpsons, they talk about like the tire fire, the Great Springfield Tire Fire.
Yes.
Okay? So, you know that tires can burn. All right. So think of tires in a very loose way as, let's say, proteins. Okay. Then we, way back in high school, my buddies were so excited to finish high school that once we graduated, we got our ATARs and all the things, they wanted to burn all their notes and their textbooks. So they decided to have a bonfire and they burnt all of their year 12 notes and textbooks and stuff, right? So maybe let's equate like our textbooks and stuff from year 12, right, to kind of like carbohydrates. And then finally, we need something for fats. And let's say you've done the challenge, you've lost lots of weight, and you've got a wardrobe of old clothes. That's the old you, and you want to burn it all because you want to forget about old you because you're going to be new, you're fresh, you're new you. Okay. So let's say we've got proteins as like tires on the Springfield Tire Fire. We've got carbohydrates as like textbooks. Okay. And then we've got fats as kind of like these old clothes that you want to burn. If you were to make a fire and you put only your textbooks in the fire, okay, only put the textbooks in the fire, and that's going to be the primary fuel source for the fire, your fire is going to burn more textbooks, okay? So you can't say that, you know, you are becoming a textbook burning machine because it's the only thing that's fueling your fire, okay? Same as, let's say, you only built the Springfield Tire Fire and it's only burning tires. You can't say that, oh, I'm a tire burning machine, because it's like, well, yeah, because you're adding lots of fuel to the fire, which is tires, okay? And then finally, the same thing you could say with your old clothes. You're going to burn that, and that's the primary fuel source for the fires. You can't say, oh, I'm an old clothes burning machine, because it's, well, that's what you're burning, right? Now, this kind of relates back to some individuals, how we view macros, where we might choose to go, let's say, low protein, low carb, high fat intake, because you might have read online that, you're going to turn yourself into a fat burning machine. Goes, well, yeah, because you're only fueling yourself with fats. So that's the only energy source for your body to use. So of course, you've got to become a fat burning machine because you're burning fats. Adding to that analogy of our bonfire, the thing that will change the amount of actual body fat that you have on you, the amount of body mass that you have, is the overall calorie intake. So if you are choosing to have, let's say, a low protein, low carb, high fat diet, we know that fats are really calorie dense. So you choose to put a whole stick of butter in your coffee and you're adding olive oil to all your salads and meals because you think high fats is going to be good for you and you're going to turn yourself into a fat burning machine. But then if you consume so many calories that your fire gets bigger and you start putting on weight, you might be scratching your head going, what's going on? Even though you're burning more fats as fuel in your body, you might not be metabolizing and changing the net amount of fat on your body, okay? So the main takeaway here for nutritional tip number two, understanding macros, think of our bonfire. The size of the fire is our overall calorie intake. And then maybe like the quality, the elements of that fire is kind of like our macronutrients. We can kind of start to change our macronutrients to try to like change the fire into something else, you know, try to change it into like a fire that's more, might be better for cooking foods, or a fire that might be better for, you know, light, right? So we can kind of change our fire, but at the end of the day, the size of the fire is driven by our total caloric intake. That's it.
Very good. Very good. Yes. So I like it. I think it's very confusing because over the last few years, it's sort of become, oh gosh, I sound old, but in vogue to eat a lot of fat. You know, because it was in, say, my parents' time, maybe the 70s, 80s, it was sort of like, oh, stay away from, especially the 80s, stay away from all the fats. And, you know, mum was very much like, oh, you know, low fat everything. And now it's sort of swung the other way where it's like, consume all the fats and that's going to help. So at least your analogy is going to shed a bit of light onto that, because it's no wonder people are confused. It's confusing.
Yeah, and I think we like to put macros up on like a pedestal saying, hey, I need to look at my macros. What macro ratio is going to be my saving grace for my weight loss endeavors? And, you know, it's somewhat true because the macros, the amount of macros that we have equals the total calories that we consume. And then the total calories drives, you know, weight loss or weight gain, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's about the total calories. That's the principle. The fats, it doesn't really matter too much, especially for weight changes. Now, we would prefer to have like higher protein intakes because we need proteins to help maintain muscle mass, and we need, you know, a minimum intake of fats so that we can get some hormone production. The carbohydrates, if anything, we want to try to have as many carbs as we possibly can so that we can use them as energy easily, because we know that using proteins or fats as energy, it becomes difficult because we're going to try to convert those into glucose. So we're adding more steps in our body. So of course, we're going to feel lethargic as our body kind of makes those changes. So ideally, in the perfect world, we want, you know, the minimum protein for muscle growth, the minimum fats for our hormone production, and then as many carbs as we possibly can. That would be in an ideal world. But if anything, it just really comes down to preference. So we want to have, you know, whatever macro ratios fit within, you know, our lifestyle preferences and our environmental preferences. So you might live in a culture where you eat lots of, let's say, fresh fish. Maybe you're from, let's say, like Japan, who loves sushi, right? So maybe you have lots of fresh fish and they can be high in fats. Maybe you choose to have a high fat diet because that's what you enjoy. Or maybe you are like Coach Nick and you come from an Italian culture and you love to have your pizza and your pasta, right? And you want to have lots of carby foods. Hey, no dramas. You can have higher carbs. Maybe skew the fats down lower, try to maintain a higher protein intake, and you could be totally fine and lose a lot of weight in a really maintainable way, depending on your own preference.
Definitely. And that's where what we were talking about before ties in, where, you know, get to know your body, get to know what you prefer, what works best for you, because ultimately that's what you're going to stick to. So even if you see someone else saying that it works for them, really use your own body as your own kind of guide. Not just one day though.
No.
Like, give it time.
Give it time. Nick, let's go through some question answers for the week. So first question here, does intermittent fasting work for weight loss? Ooh, Nick, tell us, what is intermittent fasting and does it work for weight loss?
That's funny because this is almost the same answer as you just said before. You know, the thing is, it comes down to really personal preference in a way. But what intermittent fasting is, because it's like this buzzword, but it really just means restricting your eating into certain time windows. So a popular one, I believe, is going 18 hours without food and then fitting your food into 6 hours. Now, you can imagine why this might work for someone, because how much food can you really eat in the 6 hours? You might even eat one huge meal, but you know, as long as you just eat what you normally would eat, but it's quite big, you're going to feel pretty full, and you're going to find that you probably consume less total calories overall just because you've got less amount of time to eat them. I mean, there's a lot of people that would prove that statement wrong, probably me. Like, the thing is, for example, if I was to do intermittent fasting, it'd be hopeless because I'd probably just guts like three huge meals because I'm sort of used to doing that. So I don't know if I'd be able to put it all into that time frame. But for people who like to have an idea of stopping eating, because often like that nighttime snacking is something that really can let people down. So just say that you say to yourself, I'm going to eat all my food and I'm going to stop at 6 p.m. and that's your rule and that works for you, then that's fine. But it's not because of the magic of 6 p.m. suddenly switches on a magic fairy. It's because it restricts your calories into certain periods of time. So that's plain old intermittent fasting. I mean, it can be combined with a million other quote-unquote diets. So that's where it gets a bit complex, because you might think, oh, but my friend does it and doesn't eat carbs. And this is, we're just talking about time-restricted eating here. So it wouldn't be helpful for Shane, my husband, good old Shane, because Shane gets hangry. I mean, look, he'd probably be all right if he fasted for a long, long time and got everything under control, but that's not what we're talking about either. But he can't go without food. He just simply can't. It's the way that he is. He's a big person. He's 100 kilos, I think, and he just simply can't. So it wouldn't work for him, because also everyone around him would be miserable and there really wouldn't be any point, because the minute that he got his hands on some food, he would neck three times the amount of calories that he's supposed to have in one day just in the first meal. So for someone like Shane, it wouldn't be any good. So it's just up to you and your lifestyle. It could be, I think, I'm not going to advocate for or against, but I'm just thinking in terms of when would it be convenient. Just say you're someone who finds it hard to, like, think about making a breakfast or prepping a meal, and you'd have to take it with you. If you just don't eat that meal but have it later, then I guess that is not something you have to worry about if you have it when you get home. But that's also just a practical thing. So, I think also the other thing is that it can be limiting. If you're somebody who trains and you want to make the most of, distributing your nutrition throughout the day, like, you know, certain grams of protein per meal, things like that, just that nitty gritty stuff, that's a bit hard, because you're kind of dumping it into your body all in one go. So it also depends on how your digestive system takes that. Mine, I probably do better with just meals spaced out over time. How about you?
Yeah, I've tried intermittent fasting. I'm not a fan. I think I'm definitely one to... my favorite thing about going to sleep is it fast forwards to my next meal for breakfast time. I do love breakfast food. And I've tried it, not a huge fan. Bring it back to maybe the bonfire analogy, right? Imagine you're trying to have a fire going 24/7. Okay, that's your body. You're trying to make a fire go 24/7, and only one time a day are you allowed to add fuel to that fire. So you add a giant tree stump to that fire, okay, and then you imagine that fire, it kind of reaches a peak maybe a few hours after you put that log on the fire, and then over time it slowly becomes smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So you got this tiny little fire going for the rest of the day, and then you come along one time the next day and just dump another log onto that fire. A kind of similar idea. So imagine if you were putting that log on the fire at midday, but then at 6 p.m. you're trying to cook your dinner, you're trying to get your damper on the fire. Can you be certain that that fire is going to be at a certain quality that you could cook that damper? Same type of idea when it comes to training. So if you only ate at midday, using one meal as an example, and then every day you're trying to train at 6 p.m., can you say with confidence that you're going to have a high level of nutrients and quality of be able to perform at that time? You can't say it super confidently. There are a few folk out there that try to advocate intermittent fasting for, like, health benefits. Okay.
Autophagy.
So autophagy it actually happens when we are in an energy deficit. So that's another buzzword, autophagy. But there was an interesting study that was highlighted by Aragon. He's one of the lead writers of the sports nutrition association, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and even old mate Lane Norton did a review of this paper as well. It was the biggest systematic review on intermittent fasting, which followed individuals over 6 months, and what they concluded was that there was no major benefit between intermittent fasting or just consuming an energy deficit for markers in health, cardiovascular disease, weight loss and such. So when it comes to buzzwords like autophagy, or even trying to use intermittent fasting for health, there's no high quality data that suggests that, and that it's not much different from just consuming at an energy deficit. So if you're sitting there scratching your head going, well, should I do intermittent fasting? I heard it's good for my health. It might be just the same to follow an energy deficit where, portion control, eat what you'd like to eat, just eat a little bit less, and you might reap the exact same benefits as intermittent fasting.
Absolutely. So, just because if someone says it worked for them, you don't know their circumstances. So, don't stress. Just do what works best for you and stick to it. Consistency wins.
That's right. Yeah. It's all about, you know, your environment and what works for you. And maybe you are one that intermittent fasting works for you because you don't like breakfast food, or maybe you're like myself or like Shane, where we would struggle, especially in that transition period, and we probably wouldn't be fun to be around.
No, do not ever suggest that to Shane. It would not be good.
No. Nick, next question here is, what is insulin resistance? What is insulin resistance? Okay, so the way it works is, think of insulin as like a key, okay, like a key, and it unlocks the door to a cell, okay? So when you have nutrients in your blood, that nutrients needs to enter the cell, but the cell is kind of like locked. It's got a door and you need something to open that door. And here comes insulin. Hello, knock, knock, knock. He opens the door. And then once the door opens, primarily glucose, because that's the main energy source for a cell, goes into that cell and goes, oh, hi, I'm here, guys. So we need that insulin to be able to open the door to a cell. Okay. Now, when we have a high amount of glucose in our bloodstream, think of glucose, you know, in a loose way as maybe door-to-door salesman, knock, 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 right? Maybe the first kind of glucose, you open the door, all right, come on in, you know, right? But then, you know, if there is non-stop all day, knock, 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 glucose coming into your cell, you might be like, all right, I've had enough, okay? Similar idea to what happens in your body. If you have a heightened level of blood glucose, okay, you've been eating lots of food, or lots of carb dense foods, lots of sugary foods, your blood glucose level is really high, your cells might be like, oh, hold on, man, like, stop knocking on my door, I'm going to change my locks, that key doesn't work anymore, right? That's when you go through a process of insulin resistance. Okay. So this is what happens in diabetes, type 2 diabetes more specifically. Type 1 is when we struggle to make insulin. Okay. So we don't actually have a key. So the glucose is knocking and the cells inside are like, come on inside. But there's no key to open that door. So they're just kind of waving each other the window awkwardly, like, hi. That's type 1 diabetes. Type 2 is that the key no longer works. Maybe, you know, the key's in the door and it's been broken and the door handle doesn't work. And, you know, there's the glucose is an old janitor with a shaky keys and it's got all the keys and trying to find the right key in the hole. That's type 2 diabetes. Okay. So insulin resistance is when we have a really high glucose blood level, a high concentration of glucose in the bloodstream, which the cells become immune or resistant to insulin, so that we need to find ways to get that blood sugar down so that we can fight that insulin resistance, or supplement with more insulin to try a different key to get into that door. So hopefully that analogy works well.
Interesting.
Nick, next question here is, I'm afraid to lift weights as I think I'll get injured. Where do I start? Go on, Nick. What advice would you give this person?
Oh, goodness. Did my mum write this? well, I have to say, please don't be afraid. You're going to say, oh, duh, but you can get injured walking your dog. This sounds like a VB commercial. You can get injured crossing the road. You can get injured talking on your phone. You can fry your head. You can get injured, painting your roof. There's so many ways that you could, quote unquote, get injured. Weight training, when done properly, really carries a pretty low risk of injury. It's just when you try and do something that's a little bit outside of your scope when you're weightlifting, perhaps lifting something a little bit too heavy or with the wrong technique. And even then, you know, sometimes, I'm not going to say all the time, but you can get away with it for a little bit. So you probably know what's going on there. It's very, very, very safe. Like, if you compare it to sports where you have to wear a mouth guard, like boxing or even, footy, rugby, all sorts of stuff like that, it's pretty tame. You know, there's so many different ages that go to the gym, really, and all different body weights, all different shapes and sizes. If it was that scary, then people would stay away, really, wouldn't they? They certainly wouldn't be signing up in droves and it wouldn't be so popular. I think, you know, the stronger that you get, the less likely you are to hurt yourself just simply because you're quite strong in terms of, I'm not talking about being a strong man and things like that, but what I'm saying is, if you don't lift weights and then you start, it's probably more likely that ultimately you won't have that bad back and things that you might have now. So you've really got to, obviously, I would start with finding somebody qualified to show you through. And it's understandable, of course, that you are going to be a bit afraid at first, and like anything. So if I was going to teach my kids how to drive, I don't know if I'd want to, so I'd probably enlist the help of a driving service, and I don't expect them to just jump into the car and do it themselves. So it'd be the same as going to the gym, and there's nothing wrong with getting somebody to help you and show you around and give you a basic program. Make sure that the weight is scaled accordingly to what you can do, because otherwise you might get injured, but that's just the same as if I gave my daughter a Ferrari, you know. And she's only allowed to drive, not yet, but she's certainly not allowed to drive a Ferrari. And just use a technique that you know that you can do and you can repeat over and over again, because that's how we all get good at a skill. So swimming, anything can cause you to be injured until you learn how to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that last point you made about like repeatability is really important, because, you know, let's say like swimming, if you do freestyle the same way over and over and over again, you know, your body gets good at doing freestyle that particular way. And then as you practice that stroke over and over again, you know, you become stronger at that stroke and you're able to create more power, then your speed increases and you could do, you know, more laps with, you know, less effort and such, right? But if you were to rapidly change that technique, let's say if you go from freestyle to, let's say, something really extreme like butterfly, you try to do the same power speed as your freestyle as a butterfly stroke, of course, you know, your shoulders might not be able to keep up with it, you know, your back might be like, what the hell is kind of going on, your legs are like, oh, well, I'm not really involved in this anymore, like I can't, you know, this is different. That's when it's at a higher risk of injury, because you're trying to apply the same load through the same joints, even though it's not ready for that load, okay? And the same could be said with strength training. So if you are trying to do a bicep curl, you do a bicep curl a certain way, you've done the exact same way for 20 years, and then you try to rapidly change that bicep curl with the same load, your shoulder and your elbow and your wrist might be like, whoa, this isn't what we're used to, this isn't right. And then that's when an injury is at a higher risk of occurring. Yeah, so I think the repeatable technique. But what I love about strength training is that you can scale it accordingly. So if you have never strength trained before, great, you can start with, you know, the 1 kilo or the 5 kilo loads. But if you've done lots of practice, you could scale it up to 200 kilo hip thrusts like Coach Nick. But if you're going to go out into a boxing ring day one, you might have a plan until you get punched in the face. And that could be an unscalable way to kind of get into physical activity, which is what I like about strength training, scalability.
Yeah. There's no way I would go into a boxing ring.
No.
No way. Like, unless there was a hip thrust component. I actually am, apparently, according to Shane, I'd be quite good at Brazilian jiu-jitsu, because I have very strong quads and, yeah. I can squash him with my quads.
Yeah, you could do, I reckon there's elements of a hip thrust in a jiu-jitsu, maybe like a takedown. You know, it's also like on the floor, you might be at someone like, you know, trying to grapple you, and if you're able to like hip thrust and like change the center of gravity in that position. Yeah, I reckon that could be more sports specific.
Well, look, I mean, never say never, hey, but yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, you never know.
No. Mm-mm. Nick, final question here. And I think this is a continuation from last week where we spoke a little bit about gluconeogenesis. Mm-hmm. And this question is, how do I get into ketosis? How do I get into ketosis? Okay, so let's take a moment to acknowledge the question, how do I get into ketosis, and take away the assumptions of, you know, why do you want to get into ketosis, etc. Yeah. Okay, so ketosis is the system or state you can get your body into where you no longer use glucose as energy in the cell, and you use ketone bodies. Okay, so KBs we call them, the ketones, or these types of fatty acids that our body can utilize as fuel. Okay, so when we go through processes of either fasting or really low carb intakes, and low carb intakes is literature says less than about 20 grams of carbohydrates per day. Okay, so when we are in states of fasting, and this isn't just intermittent fasting, like over the day, like fasting, or low carb intakes, we can go through a process of ketosis. Now, in context, 20 grams of carbs is quite low. Let's say
less than a banana. Less than a banana.
Banana's
25 grams.
Yeah. So from memory, bananas per 100 grams of bananas is about 23 grams of carbs. So, you know, an average banana is about 100 grams. So yeah, if you were to have, let's say you chose to only eat chicken breast all day and you had one banana, like, you know, you might not be in that state to take us into ketosis. Okay, so what happens in the body is when we are in that fasting state or that low carb state, we don't have enough glucose stores to support what's called the Krebs cycle, which is what actually happens inside the cell. So imagine that analogy before, you got knock, knock, knock at the door, glucose is there, uses insulin to go inside the house, it opens the door. The Krebs cycle is maybe the party in the house, okay? So there's not enough glucose to support the party. You know, imagine rocking up to the party and you're the one person there, like, hey, everybody, I'm here for the party. There's no party there, right? There's one person.
Sad.
So I know, it's sad. And then there's also not enough glucose to support the central nervous system, talking about the brain and the spinal cord and stuff, right? So we also know that our brain can't use fatty acids, like from fats, even though they're floating around the bloodstream, like, you know, in our like triglycerides and stuff, that doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier, right? So we can't utilize those as energy. So this is why the brain likes to use glucose through that CNS. So when we are in that low carbohydrate intake, after about half a week, usually about 3 or 4 days, you know, the nervous system needs to find another way to get energy. And that's when the liver starts creating ketones, and that gets pushed into the bloodstream. Now, the concentration here, follow me here, the concentration of ketones starts very low, okay? So comparing the concentration of glucose in the blood to ketones, ketones start at about less than 1/10 of the concentration of glucose. So we need to wait for this concentration of ketones to reach the same kind of threshold as glucose for our body to go, okay, yeah, cool, we can now have a party with ketones instead of glucose. So then the cells and the Krebs cycle can start using that, and then the nervous system can start using ketones as a fuel source. So the main takeaways here is that, one, we either need to be in a fasted state or an extremely low carb intake, less than around 20 grams of carbs per day, to enter that ketosis state where we are making ketone bodies. That can take time. So after, you know, 3 or 4 days of this low carbohydrate or low glucose level in our body, that's when it triggers a cascade of events for the liver to start creating ketones. You know, each individual will be different about how quickly we make those ketones. If you've gone into ketosis frequently for whatever reason, you might be able to produce ketones quicker than others. So let's say myself, I haven't entered a ketosis state since I, you know, maybe in my early 20s when I tried dabbling in keto because that was all the rage. So, you know, for me, it might take, you know, week, 2 weeks for me to reach a threshold where I could use ketone bodies. And in that week or two, I'll probably be feeling like absolute trash as I wait with, you know, a low glucose level. My cells are having a one-person party going, hey guys, what's going on, while I wait for more people to enter that party so I can kind of function as a normal human being. So that's kind of how we would enter ketosis over that time. And then once we, it's funny because kind of we spend all this time trying to build up into this ketosis mode, but then as soon as we start having glucose again in any sense, you know, let's say you've entered ketosis, you spent 2 weeks, I finally made it, tick the box, you decide to have, you know, let's say a banana, right, using that as an example. Oh yeah, I'm at a party, I'm gonna have fruit salad, yummy, have that banana. Then, you know, that's when it triggers the cascade and we go, oh, we got glucose again, all right, we can stop making those ketones anymore because we've got this preferred energy source again, glucose. So once you enter ketosis, you've got to be disciplined to stay in ketosis. And, you know, we won't get into why you would want to enter ketosis, but that would be the process of that.
Yes, definitely. And sometimes I think a mistake people make also is thinking that it's going to solve everything. We're not going to talk about that, but it's not going to necessarily solve everything for you. Just eliminating an entire macronutrient group, it's not necessarily going to help.
No.
Just saying.
Yeah, I would put it almost in the same category as, like, you know, does intermittent fasting work for weight loss? You know, does, ketosis work for weight loss? And it's like, well, it could, because, you know, if you completely get rid of a macronutrient group, well, you're going to have less calories throughout the day. And if you are in an energy deficit, you're probably going to reap the benefits of autophagy, or, you know, what ketosis aims to treat, where, you know, you might see some health benefits from just consuming fewer, units of energy through our calories. So, you know, for you, it might work well if you go, well, no, I'm not going to have any carbohydrates. Like, that's my blanket rule. Hey, that might work for you, because that is a rule that might work for you. And maybe you find that carb dense foods are like your kryptonite. For me, it's hummus, right? Or for me, it's anything in paste form, like yogurt, right? So maybe for you, you know that your kryptonite is, let's say, pasta. Whenever you have a pasta in front of you, ooh, you can't stop eating that pasta. So if you make yourself a blanket rule of like, oh, I'm not going to eat that pasta or carbs or anything, that might be enough to kind of keep you disciplined for a certain amount of time. And hey, if you were trying to enter a competition like the challenge or a physique show, that might work well. But if you want to make some long-term significant changes in your body, that might be problematic, because, you know, you can only go so long before you decide to have a banana or decide to have a cookie or a slice of cake for your kid's birthday, and then everything's out of the window again. So there's some deeper questions to think about.
Yeah, it's a rabbit hole. It's a rabbit hole. And you know how much I love rabbits.
Yeah. Yeah. I reckon we'll get you some tinfoil hats for your rabbits, and you could start playing the Challenge Weekly Show backwards, and maybe your rabbits will pick up on the little messages that we were
sending. I think they'll figure it out and they'll leave me a message.
like straighten up their hay or their bed into like a little message trying to communicate to the humans. Yes. Yeah.
They'll say, Grammy, Coach Steve is saying that you should lift weights.
Well, look, let's wrap it up there for episode number 68. We'll catch you next week for a fun episode number 69, where will be the launch of our brand new app next week. Of course, if you enjoyed this episode, check out the 67 other episodes, especially if you're listening to it backwards. And yes, we'll see you next week. We'll do this all over again.
Thank you very much, everybody. See you.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.